Grant and Danny live over all over D.C. on 106.7. Richmond now AM 910 FM at 105.1 for the next 3 hours. You can also listen to the show wherever you're at on the Odyssey app, coast to coast. And we're available streaming on video right now, live, and every single day, all show long, on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. Go join the chat. Enjoy the conversation with some of our listeners. Coming up in 1 hour on Grant and Danny, we've got tickets to HF Festival Saturday afternoon at Nationals Park. Somebody's going to win a pair at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. Right now, though, we are discussing the slow start to the season for D-tackles John Allen, Daron Payne. Statistically, Allen's got 2 hits on the quarterback. Payne has 0 through 2 games. He does have the 2 big plays he's made that have led to the only 2 sacks of the season for the Commanders, 1 in each game, both by Cleveland Farrell. And then Terry McLaurin has started similarly to last year, frankly, very, very slowly. He ended up picking it up, getting to more traditional numbers. He's one of the only 5 receivers in the league to go for 1,000 yards 4 straight seasons. He got to 10.02 last year, just barely got over the threshold, but he's got 8 catches for 39 yards, sub 5 yards per reception.
Which is wild, by the way. That's hard to do.
I think he'll be better, just like I think Allen and Payne will be better, but the guy I'm saying is going to have the best year is Payne.
So I've got Allen, and it's not, I don't think anybody's doing this in a walk, right? I don't think anybody's going to have that ridiculous year that we, you know, reference and think about for decades to come. But to me, Allen's been so consistent. His sort of metrics that aren't the counting stats, like the ones we look at, we always look at sacks, we look at, you know, forced fumbles, tackles for loss, et cetera, and those are usually there for him. But his pressures, quarterback hits, TFLs, stuff meaning that he is having an impact are pretty consistent throughout the last 4 or 5 seasons. Even when he's had higher sack totals, like he's at a 9, had a 7.5, even when they're down, it's still those numbers have always been there for Allen. I expect him to get back to that.
We'll get back to what Dan Quinn said about Terry McLaurin in a minute, because I want to get to that audio on basically this idea of not forcing him the ball and operating the offense based on whoever comes open, not making sure McLaurin is more involved. But let's go back to the phones. Pete's in Lanham wants to hop in on Grant and Danny. What's up, Pete?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Good, buddy.
Look, out of the three, I'm going to say it has to be Terry, because I know Payne and Allen just does get doubled up on, and I think they are kind of wore out. But Terry is, I know he's a little slower, but he's also a little smarter. And I've, you know, Terry's been backing Jaden from day one that he knows, you know, he's a young man and it'll come. And so he's not pressing. I'm not going to press it, but I think if anyone's going to break out season, it's going to be Terry. And maybe he's not going to burn somebody deep, but he certainly can, you know, still get open.
Thanks, Pete.
That ability, and I think he could make an impact tomorrow.
Appreciate you, bud.
I want to double-click on this idea because you brought it up, that he's not as fast as he was a few years ago. What are we basing that on? Like, why do you say that? Is it just anecdotal? It's what you notice?
Yeah, I don't have any measurements. I don't have any, you know, any pop times in front of me or, you know, any kind of PFF analytic.
He ran by his assignment on the play designed for him to catch a 9 route. He was there. He did everything right. He's free. On that post where he was kind of clearing out and then has a chance to get into space, people may not have even noticed the play, but it was one of the Jaden Daniels scrambles against Tampa. He was wide open down the field. He has gotten free behind everybody twice already this season. So to me, it doesn't feel like speed is a problem, but I will say separation with him has been an issue, it feels like, over the last couple of years. And that sometimes is an explosiveness thing, you would say.
Yeah, I think it's all part of it to me. Like, I don't know how to describe this. Because, again, he might be able to sit down, I'm sure that you would do this. But he might be able to, like, race his former self and come close. Like, in a straight line thing, right? On the market set, go, and maybe they're tied through the 40 or the 50 or whatever. It just doesn't feel like he's as quick, explosive, dangerous as he once was.
Twitchy.
Now, part of that could just be everyone knows it's him or bust, and there's defenders everywhere. He's got nowhere to go. Maybe that's something. I don't know. It's a feeling. Because where is that production? Where is the, okay, in an offense that threw it a million times last year, he barely cracked 1,000 yards. Like, how are we getting that, you know? I'm reaching for an explanation. I don't have anything definitive.
I would love, and I just don't know that we're going to get this. I don't know that's going to happen. But I would love the chance to see what McLaurin would look like in a really good passing offense with a really good quarterback. And hopefully that is what Washington becomes this year. It's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
But in his career to this point, this minute, this is not an indictment on Kingsbury or Daniels or the current team, so everyone stay out of your feelings. I'm just saying for Terry McLaurin's career, he has never at any point, it's a lot of Case Keenum and Sam Howell mm-hmm. and Alex Smith and just a bunch of busters, dude. He's never had the chance to just go out with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and see what happens. Or even just a reasonable right. situation. You know, a Cousins or a Derek Carr or whatever. Like, nothing. I would love to see what that looked like. But hopefully, Daniels becomes that guy as the year goes on. Edward, Silver Spring, you're on G&D. What's good?
Hey, Edwin. Well, how are you guys doing?
Good, buddy. Great. Thank you. What do you got?
Definitely Terry. You know, it's frustrating just seeing lately it's like been a move to just diminish it, or is he a number one on the, you know, social media? Which guy is better than him? Is he as good as this guy over here, this guy over there? You know, these guys, and they're playing with functional quarterbacks, functional passing schemes. We were barely even a forward passing team, honestly, you know?
But let me ask you this, because this is not just about two games. I would agree with you if he was coming off 1,400 last year or something. I would make two cases, then I want to get your response to them. Number one, mm-hmm. you just watched Malik Nabers for the Giants in his second career game. Mm-hmm. That's Terry does not do like that. Whatever that is not Terry, and that guy's better. Now, I'm not trying to knock Terry McLaurin. My point is just that's what an elite young wide receiver talent looks like. I know he was drafted in the top 10. McLaurin was a third-round pick. But that in and of itself is an acknowledgement. That means something, I would think. He got more targets in the second game of his career than he's ever gotten his whole career, number one. The number two point I would make is you're bristling at the idea of people asking questions about McLaurin. When are they allowed to? You know, his catch percentage, his yards per catch, his yards after contact, like all of those numbers are going down essentially year by year. When are they allowed to ask questions, or you're just never allowed to?
I'll answer that question. Last year, he was playing with a complete bum in Sam Howell. When they see him in a functional team, like with even a decent, like just an above average professional, consistent quarterback, like Cousins, like you said, Carr.
Your phone is, I appreciate the call.
Yeah, I hear the passion because you're a fan of Terry McLaurin. And my response, and again, this is like the unpleasant part of it, because no one dislikes Terry McLaurin. He's an awesome dude.
He is one of my favorite players in DC sports in the last 30 years.
If I had a daughter, I'd be like, it was the appropriate age. Please date Terry McLaurin. Bring him home. I can't wait to have Thanksgiving dinner with him. But DJ Moore had Justin Fields and Matt Eberflus, who went for 1,300 yards. Amari Cooper had Joe Flacco off the bleeping couch, who went for 1,250 yards. You see what I'm saying? Like, yes.
They also threw the ball a million times last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand that Eric Bieniemy is currently not scoring at UCLA because nobody in the NFL wanted to give him a job, and Sam Howell's a backup. But they also threw it a million times. Like, his targets last year, he had 132 targets, which was essentially the most he's ever had before. The other time he had that many targets, he caught almost 90 balls. Last year, he caught fewer than 80.
Yeah, 2 years ago, when Davante Adams was in Vegas, Derek Carr got benched. He went for 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns in a year where Carr was ultimately replaced, right? Like, I understand that it hasn't been ideal.
Last year, Davante Adams was on a Raiders team where they benched Jimmy Garoppolo.
He had 1,100
Jimmy Garoppolo
yards.
Last year, and he got benched, and then they went to AOC, not the politician lady, but the quarterback who may or may not be any good, nobody knows yet. And he had a pretty good year statistically. I think he had 100 catches for 1,100 yards or whatever.
Yeah, Garrett Wilson had infinitely better numbers last year than Terry McLaurin, especially on a per-game basis.
See, now it even sounds like we're killing Terry, which was not my goal.
It's not my goal either, but when you are like, no, it's a bad situation. It absolutely is. No one's ever, and I've argued this for years. Like, of course it's a bad situation. I think it's a bad situation now. They should have gotten someone else to help him. But the point is, like, that's the only reason I can't have that. That's kind of my point here. It's not the only reason.
This is one of my big frustrations just generally with a fan base that I love, of which I am one, and with a group of people that I adore. Okay? You guys are the reason that it's still fun to be a fan of this team. The people that are still here, that are still grinding, that are still watching. But there is, and this is not specific to DC or Commanders fans, I think this is team by team, but there is this community of folks that any questioning of any of the players that we've just decided are awesome. And he is awesome. But they're above reproach. This team never wins, ever. They haven't won anything since he got here, ever. Not his fault. But we're not the group that is too good to be questioned. They haven't had good passing offenses. They haven't had good offenses. They haven't scored a lot, and they've never won. So this idea that you just can't question anything, no. You want to do that with the Chiefs or something? Be my guest. We should be questioning everything all the time. We should be asking tough questions. And it's just, you know, if a five-year-old with his jersey doesn't like the question, I can understand that. But big boys and girls driving to and from work, I think it's okay to have a discussion about what is he. And I also agree with the caller to say, man, it would be fun to know what it looked like with a real passer for a full season. If he was the number two with Jefferson, with Kevin O'Connell and Kirk Cousins in Minnesota the last couple of years instead of, you know, Jordan Addison last year or whatever, or K.J. Osborne. My guess is Terry McLaurin will put up some damn good numbers. I agree with you. Brian's in Leesburg. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Brad.
Hey, first of all, I hope you guys have a great time this weekend. I can't wait to hear all the details. Secondly, I think it's going to be either one of the two tackles, pick them, and I have a different take on it. I think it's going to be one of them because for them, it's about their own effort. Terry is hamstrung by the system he's in. They are not. I think it's more about their effort. And for him, it's about the systems he's in, and I'll hang up to hear your response.
Yeah, another way to say, kind of something I alluded to earlier, the other D-tackles can dictate a little more directly how they play. McLaurin is a product of
an
environment.
Yeah.
It is such a dependent position that he could do everything right all day long, be running free constantly, and have two catches for 29 yards, and nobody would know the difference.
It's fair. I mean, again,
think about what we said about Luke McCaffrey. Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's right.
After week two. Where the hell was Luke McCaffrey? What's going on? And then the numbers come out, and he was the third most open receiver in the NFL, according to Separation, on that day. But it just the plays didn't go his way. It didn't get funneled that way. Jaden didn't see him. Whatever happened, and there's a feeling about him, a negative feeling about his performance that he had nothing to do with, basically.
Right. And yeah, it is super dependent, but it's also it's something that when you're not one of the two or three guys that are literally unstoppable, the uncheckable monsters of Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, you know, at times Jamar Chase, although it hadn't been the case this year, but in years past, if you're not one of those guys that it does not matter what the scheme is, doesn't matter how you bracket or cloud or cover or jam or in and out or whatever the hell you want to call it, those guys are going to get theirs.
What a burger.
If you're not there, which is not a crime to not be there, there's hundreds of guys that aren't at that level.
Jack in the box.
You can be taken away. And McLaurin can to a degree. There's also the limiting of the offense. I really think that's a huge factor. They're not right now in the business of, Terry, let's block something up for you. You go 20 yards and run a deep comeback, or you run this square in that's going to take 3 or 4 seconds for us to really get what we want. They're not in the business of doing that right now because they got a rookie quarterback and an unsure line.
Shane's in Oxon Hill on Grant and Danny. What's up, Shane?
What's going on, guys?
Hey, buddy.
I just wanted to say, man, that I think that Terry will be awesome in another offense. Let me turn off this background noise. I think that he will be great in another offense. You know, I think that he's comparable to guys like Brandon Ayuk and, you know, some of the other top guys in the league. He may not be as dynamic with the ball in his hands after the catch, but if he was in a Shanahan offense and the ball was being delivered on time, I think that he gets enough separation. He has the speed and he has the hands to be a standout receiver, I think, in a lot of the offenses in this league. And that's one of the reasons why, not to make this about Jaden Daniels, but it's the reason why I wanted another, like, a true quarterback, so to say, prospect. And I'm going to say that I was a May guy, you know what I'm saying, because I just thought that he was better at the quarterbacking aspect of things, not being an athlete first. But I just wanted to say that I thought that Terry is underappreciated, and I think that kind of undervalued still with this offense. It seems like that I thought it would be different than what we've seen with Bieniemy. And yeah, I just hope that we finally can scheme up something and that he gets the credit that he's due, because I think that a lot of the things that he, you know, it's not his fault, you know, that he doesn't get the ball. Like you said, it's on the quarterback to get it and the blocking. And I think that he's just been dealt a bad hand, honestly.
I get it. And I'm with you, Shane. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. Let me ask you this.
Yep.
I'm a Kyle Mark. Everybody knows that. It's just so correct, by the way. Anyway, 85 catches for 1,197 yards. That's what I predict Terry McLaurin to have in San Francisco this year. 85 for 1,197. He runs those square ins, those digs, like all that stuff underneath crossers and drags beautifully. I think they would have, basically he'd be more of the Ayuk, I would call it, to like the Debo or whatever. But to me, he would be like the Pierre of the Kyle offense, in a sense. Do you agree with that? Like in that offense with that kind of play caller, he would eat.
He would do better than here, yes.
I mean, my whole thing with him is, I don't even want to use the word dynamic, but like he is not a separator. The only word I keep coming back to is like from a weapon standpoint is a dynamicism or something, but like that ability, Neighbors is, you all watch Neighbors, I'll just use that. Whatever that is, it's just not his game. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Jamar Chase, some of these young, he is a very, he's like an Art Monk. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. One of the greatest to ever do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like run, cut, guy on your back, catch the ball. Like to me, that's more of what he is than what the league is trending to, which is, it'd be nice to have a Malik Neighbors. You know, that's what, to me, the 1,300, 1,500, 1,700-yard guy looks like.
Try to use a different analogy. Think of basketball. Who's the best scorer in the league right now? Top of your head. Luka Doncic is who I thought of.
Okay,
how's
I'll
that?
Take that.
Does that work for you?
I'm out of season on the NBA.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was going to say Steph shooter, Luka scorer.
Yeah, Luka scoring 25 a game. Or excuse me, 34 a game. You know what everyone knows? He's getting the ball. It's worth it for that coach to go, I don't care that they know. I'm going to dial stuff up for Luka Doncic at all times.
So I'm glad you said that. This was Dan Quinn today talking about not wanting to force the ball to Terry McLaurin and instead wanting Jaden Daniels, and he's happy that he's basically going, I'm not going to fit that in there to him. Let's find somebody else.
Try to move Terry around into different spots, which, you know, is important because he is, you know, has that like playmaking ability. So you want to find the spots to go. As we're going just into our second, you know, full lap together, there'll be more ops for him than we need them to be. What you don't want to do is force the ones that aren't there and make sure, even though in a certain route he may be the primary read, but if that one's taken away, that you don't force that one and go to somewhere else. I really respect that about Jaden of making good processing decisions.
Stop it there. Here's my point on this. Terry is a contested catch king. Think about that catch against the Colts, mm-hmm. anecdotally, but like, over the years, Terry McLaurin is a contested catch star, right? The idea, it's rarely going to be ass open. It's just not going to be wide open all the time. That quote worries me a little bit. Like, don't force it. No. To Terry McLaurin, he doesn't need to be open to catch the football. In fact, most of the time, the defender's going to be close and he's going to make you look right. It's that slant that Jaden threw a dime. It was 6-7 yard slant, whatever. But it was like the best throw to me in a small window that he's made. NFL drove it in type throw. That's Terry. He takes a big hit. He's got a guy hanging from his back, draped over him like a blanket. And Quinn's point is, if it's not there, let's not throw it. Well, if it's got to be there, then he's not going to get as many looks, I will say. Isn't that the beauty of McLaurin?
That's part of the appeal, right? Is on a 50-50, he makes you right, because it's not 50-50. He's winning. So the point I was trying to make with Doncic, and you could pick any of a dozen scorers or so, it doesn't matter that they know. The whole priority is to get in the ball. Even if they know, it's critical. There are receivers that would fit that bill. I bet you Justin Jefferson appears on the scouting report when you play the Minnesota Vikings. That doesn't matter. It's too important. They can know all they want. He has to get the ball. Now, there's nothing wrong, picking again the NBA example, nothing wrong with, Miles Bridges. That's a good player. Miles Bridges is a very nice player. That cost balance is not worth it anymore. In other words, I can't stop everything that I'm doing and go, I need Miles Bridges to have 25 shots. Otherwise, we had a bad night at the office. Right? He'll get his. He'll get some. He's a good player. He will make some plays and make it happen for you. But he ain't Luka Doncic, because nobody is. That's an MVP candidate, right? And that's an extreme example, but the same kind of applies here. There's a tier of receiver where it doesn't matter the day, the weather, the opponent. That dude is getting the football, and that's the only thing I'm walking to my offensive coordinator's office that week going, do you have enough for Tyreek Hill this week? Because we only had a couple catches this past week, and you could see our offense really struggled. Do you have enough in for him this week? Great, I'll see you Sunday. We're not doing that with McLaurin.
The Giants, I'm over talking about Malik Neighbors, but I love Malik Neighbors.
Well, you just saw it, yeah.
Also, I just love Malik Neighbors.
How do you feel about Malik Neighbors?
I like him a little bit. There was nobody else on that offense that worried you even a little bit. Not an iota. Devin Singletary plowing for 5 is cute. Go get your 5, sir. 20 of those and you get to score a touchdown. The rest of the receiving core, it's just Jags. If they improve a little bit, they'd be the 80th best receiver in the league. And Washington, knowing that, 16 targets, 10 catches, 127, would have been 11 for 135 if he made the nice catch on the sideline to put the game away. They couldn't do anything with him. You're right. I mean, that's you got if you got that skill set, it doesn't really matter. You just find a way. But we're going to see if they can continue to scheme it to make it work for Terry McLaurin. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's talk about the quarterback position, who's hot and who's not, through a couple of games, including some odds on who the quarterback most likely to be benched next after Bryce Young lost his job is in the NFL. We'll get to that on Grant and Danny. G&D on the Fan, DC, Richmond, Odyssey app, and 106.7 The Fan YouTube. You can go watch us right now. Want to talk about the quarterback position, who's hot, who's not in the NFL. Our double plays coming up at 3:45, and in 30 minutes on the nose, we're giving away those tickets for you to go see the HF Festival at Nats Park on Saturday. All right, let's start with the quarterbacks who have played the best so far this season, because it's a pretty surprising list. How about what Derek Carr has turned in for his homework in New Orleans to this point through two games? Carr, 5 touchdowns and a pick, completing 77%, 443 yards. Carr went for 203 scores against the Panthers and then took the second half off. And then 243 in a pair against the Cowboys, was intercepted once. They have scored on every single drive. Clint Kubiak's got them under center 70% of the time, the most of anybody in the league, and it is working.
Throwing it back to the, you know, early 2000 Shanahan style, right? I mean, that offense has been unbelievably good. They haven't even needed Chris Olave at this point. I mean, he's barely been involved as they've scored 90-plus points through two games. What an absolute display.
Level of confidence, let's go 1 to 10 scale here, that Derek Carr has a great season. I'm going to say 7.5. I actually really like the fit for him in this offense, under center, drop back, play action. I like their weapons okay. He's not going to sustain this heater. That would be impossible. But I think it's going to I think it's going to be okay. I think he's going to be good.
We're not doing MVP record-setting type stuff, right? But he's going to have a decent year because they run the ball tremendously well. Everything's kind of, you know, one look leads to another. Everything's related. They're doing fakes off of fakes and counters off counters, et cetera. Everything looks right for them. I think once the league adjusts, this will cool off, which is, I'm sure, a hot take after they've averaged 45 points a game. This is me saying they won't average 45 points again the rest of the way as there's more tape out there. But I think he has a nice year.
Another quarterback who has played very well, Sam Darnold in Minnesota, 72% complete, 476 yards with 4 touchdowns and 2 picks. They're 2-0. By the way, their defense is number one in blitzes, number one in pressures, number one in sacks, pretty much every single category right now under Brian Flores. But as far as the quarterback goes, he had a walk-in-the-park kind of game against the Giants, 19 of 24 with a couple of touchdowns, and then he was very solid against San Francisco. Now, the numbers are buoyed by a 97-yard touchdown, obviously, to Justin Jefferson, and Jefferson did the heavy lifting on that play, but who cares? I mean, otherwise, he still threw for right around, you know, 170 yards, a touchdown, and was 16 of 25 passing. So it was a much more pedestrian Darnold performance in week two, but hard to argue with what they've gotten out of him in their first two games post-Cousins.
He's been fantastic. There's no changing that. There's the period. Here's the next paragraph. I just can't.
Give me your 1 to 10.
I'm not mentally there that Sam Darnold's going to have a good year. I'm 2 out of 10 confident. I just don't. I can't. With not him. If his name was Sam Stevens, I'd go, maybe they found somebody. There's too much, oh my God, what are you doing, Sam Darnold, in my memory bank.
How old do you think he is?
27?
27. Still not very old. Still a guy that was in terrible situations earlier in his career.
Totally was.
With the Jets and the Panthers specifically. He has since worked with Kyle Shanahan and Kevin O'Connell. That'll turn you around a little bit. I'm going to give him a 4.5 out of 10. Like you, I don't completely believe in the player, but I believe in O'Connell. I believe in Jefferson and the scheme. I believe in receivers are going to get open from time to time. And I think that the way Minnesota's playing defense, he's going to be put in some admirable positions where they're going to be in a lot of football games. They're going to be leading a lot of football games. So That helps too. They also are running the ball really well with Aaron Jones, who they just brought over this offseason. Last year, Alex Mattison was the guy, and they struggled. This year, it's like Aaron Jones and Ty Chandler. Those guys are pretty explosive. How about Baker Mayfield? We saw the Baker Mayfield show in week one. He crashed back to earth a little bit against the Detroit Lions in week two. But through two games, listen to these numbers. 474 yards, 5 touchdowns and a pick, 2-0 Tampa. He's completed 74% of his passes. He's also rushed for a touchdown as well. Baker Mayfield, just 12 of 19 for a 185 in his last game. But that first gem against Washington still looms pretty large. Level of confidence that Mayfield, who was good last year, has a strong season for the Bucs.
So probably right in the middle at 5. This is a really good fit, right? Because you mentioned it. Evans, Godwin, and Rashad White, all excellent pass catchers in their own right. So having all three of those guys would help anybody. I like that O-line. The division doesn't scare the hell out of me. I think he ends up having an okay year. What I said before they played Washington is he'll have a great first week and then slowly peter out as the season progresses and not do what he did last year. Last year to me was more like that's the positive top-end extreme. I think he settles into just underneath that.
7 out of 10 confident he'll be good again. Last year was 4,000 yards, nearly 30 touchdown passes, 10 or fewer interceptions, I think, something like that. I think it'll be similar again this year. Evans, Godwin, solid defense, bad division. No reason, I don't think, that Mayfield in his second year there isn't going to be pretty comfortable. Now, if week one was the Lions game and he didn't play Washington yet, we wouldn't be talking about him at all. It was kind of pedestrian. But you get to play the Commanders, your numbers are going to be pretty good. And I just think, as you said, it's a solid fit as we saw last year. Last one of the hot quarterbacks to start the season here on Grant and Danny. Kyler Murray lit it up against the Rams in week two. 4 incompletions, 17 of 21. That's 81%. 265 yards, 3 touchdowns. And basically, he did a lot of the heavy lifting in the first quarter when he went 4 for 130 to Marvin Harrison for a couple of touchdowns. They ended up taking their foot off the gas pedal because they were just embarrassing the Rams. Should have gone running clock like high school football. Week one, he was solid as well. 28-34 loss at the hands of the Bills for Arizona, but he was 21 of 31 for a 160 and a touchdown. Kyler Murray playing lights out football, 4 tutties and 0 picks this season, 73% passer. What do you think?
I am a believer. I am buying heavy stock in this one. To me, not having Cliff Kingsbury around and him being healthy with a bit more rejuvenated roster around him, I think he's in for a huge year. I don't know how huge, but I think it's going to be a big league. So give me an 8.5 out of 10.
I'm going to go with a 8 out of 10 as well. Adding Harrison to that offense is going to be really, really helpful for Murray. He needed a guy like that to alleviate some pressure. All right, let's look at the flip side. These are the bad quarterbacks in the league, I suppose. The category is, who is the next quarterback to be benched post the benching in Carolina of Bryce Young? This is from Bet Online. They've got odds here. The odds read, most likely Daniel Jones of the Giants at 4-1. I guess they'd go to Drew Lock, although that fan base loves Tommy DeVito. Bo Nix at 6-1, you'd be benching a rookie to go to Zach Wilson. A little harder for me to believe unless he just plays really badly for several weeks. Jacoby Brissett at 6-1. Even though New England's overachieved, I think the argument here is
rookie waiting in the wings, drafted 3rd overall. Yeah.
Drake May's nipping at his heels. Will Levis, 8-1. This one's interesting. Who's the backup to Will Levis in Tennessee?
I was trying to look it up just now, but I'm getting a little slow internet situation.
Will Levis has had a back-breaking, awful turnover in each of the two games the Titans have played.
It's really cost them.
To the point where he walked over and his coach said to him, "What in the bleep is the matter with you?" Mason Rudolph is their backup.
Oh, there you go.
I guess I could see that. You know, if he's a first-year head coach, you're off to a bad start. Everyone's going to be questioning you. If Will Levis doesn't pick it up, I could see a path to that. The other one's Gardner Minshew in Vegas with the Raiders because Aiden O'Connell is backing him up, who played last year. And they were in a nip-and-tuck competition until basically right before the season. That was the last competition to end, in fact. So of those guys, or you could take somebody else, who's the next QB in the NFL to be benched?
Levis is my answer just because of these galling mistakes, right? Where Tennessee's been in these games that they've played. Defensively, they've been pretty damn good, I would say. They've frustrated opponents and really made them work for stuff. And it's been, you know, a lead relinquished because of a horrendous play in week one against Chicago. And, you know, kind of similar story in week number two against the Jets. You can't do that as you're trying to sort of establish this new way of doing things. Doesn't necessarily mean it sort of does that you wouldn't go back to him at any point, but as you're trying to build the Callahan way, so to speak, you can't do that, right? This is how we're going to win. It's take care of the football, play some defense, ground and pound. Oh my God, Will Levis, you're not fitting the program. So maybe then they go to Mason Rudolph.
I'm going to go with Jacoby Brissett at 6-1, third most likely according to the odds. New England plays the Jets tonight on Thursday Night Football. They may beat the Jets. I think they're, so far through 2 weeks, a comparable team. If they play close, though, and lose, they then have the 49ers next week in San Francisco. Let's say they lose that game and they're 1-3 and they're playing close. I think with the Dolphins, Texans, Jags, Jets coming up on the schedule, that's a softish landing spot. Where if they wanted to get Drake May into the fold, that would be a time where you could do it. The Dolphins without Tua. You're going to lose to the Texans, but it's back-to-back home games. Then you go to Jacksonville. It'll be a nice weather game against the Jaguars. Then you're back at home for the third time in 4 weeks against the Jets. Then you play the Titans, the Bears, which doesn't look like a big deal. The Rams, maybe they're healthier, but I mean, then the Dolphins again, the Colts. Like that is a easy schedule, by the way, for the Patriots. So I'll say in the next few weeks we see Drake May. Brissett will have something to say about that. If he plays well and right. They win, I don't think they make a change.
So the obstacle there to me is first-year head coach trying to, you know, sort of puff his chest out a little bit and say, this is how we're going to do it.
And a former teammate of Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, it's like we're going to compete and we're going to – the best player is going to win and blah, blah, blah. Or best chance to win and that player is going to play and we're going to eat nails and crap lightning. I don't know. That to me would be the obstacle, right? Is like sort of the macho attitude of it. But big picture for the organization, May is the answer, just a matter of when.
If you're going to do that with lightning, then what is thunder in that analogy?
Exactly. See what I'm saying?
I think we know what thunder would
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
Little roaring thunder.
Little roaring thunder. and you've never admitted to doing that at work.
You okay in there? Knock, knock.
That's just some roaring thunder.
Can we get a courtesy flush? The double play comes your way next on Grant and Danny. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. And then right at the top of the hour in 20 minutes from right now, we are giving away tickets to the HF Festival on the Fan. Our double play every day at 3:45 is driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today.
So here's my question. I thought this was more ubiquitous than it is. Okay. So it's the fall, which is wonderful. It's our time. And the wife gets inspired in the fall for delicious foodstuffs. We had wings over the weekend that she got from Wegmans. She's made chili a couple different times as the weather's starting to turn, which is just so nice. Windows open, eat the chili, football type times. So we had a different dinner the other night, okay, and chili from Sunday. The dinner from the other night, I think it was either Monday or Tuesday, had rice as part of the meal. I love rice so much. It's one of the reasons why I find it impossible to lose weight. Any hoodles, I combined leftovers, like Voltron. I put a base of rice down, then I put the chili on top of it, mixed it up, put it in the microwave, then as I'm stirring it, heating it up, add a little cheese, kind of the normal toppings. I got looks like I had just, I don't know, like invaded another country. Like I was a space alien with a million heads. I thought the chili rice combo was fairly standard. Because I remember it from being a little kid going to elementary school, and that was one of the lunches, like in the rotating group of lunches that you had when you just went to school, and like, here's the lunch from the cafeteria. We had chili and rice, and it was a pretty standard thing. I've always thought that goes together. Apparently, I'm one of the weird ones. So I ask all three of ye that work on this radio program together with yours truly, is that a standard combo or like an eccentric combo? Is that a weird combo? Having a little rice with your chili.
I would prefer rice because I like rice with anything.
Yeah.
And especially in that situation, you put the rice down as your base, you plop the chili on top, It's wet, sops it up.
Mm-hmm.
Makes perfect sense as far as I'm concerned. Having said that, one, I don't do chili. Not a chili guy. Always something better. It's just not something that's for me. There's beans in it, so I'm out. Two, when chili is done at my house and I don't take part, there's never rice involved. But if I was eating chili and rice was an option every time, I'm putting it right on top of that rice.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. From the, before we go on, chili, you guys are generally aware of chili.
Yeah. Yeah.
Its merits.
Chili's great.
Okay. Then, okay.
Chili's
great. Just give us a second.
I'm also aware of chili and its merits.
Yeah. So we're going to, Darius, please continue.
I'm trying to recall if I've ever had chili and rice. It sounds phenomenal, and it sounds like something I would do. I don't recall ever having it made that way,
though. Now, my one seed for basis, if we're calling it that, like you think of an ice cream sundae, like it's got that cookie base or like of a piece course. Of cake or brownie or whatever. My favorite base is cornbread. That's the one seed, and it's perfect. It just goes, and now you're going, you're chopping it up. I like to do a base of cornbread, chili, and then take a piece of cornbread and crumble it on top, almost like a topping. It's a base and a topping. It's like a big cornbread sandwich, but I'm eating it with a spoon.
Of course.
In lieu of cornbread, the rice to me serves a similar purpose, right? You're a cornbread guy at the base of chili.
Yeah. It sounds like it works to me. I don't see why that's such an issue. But yeah, if it's whether or not it's standard, I can't say I'm familiar enough with it to know if that's standard.
Bryno, what do you got?
So first and foremost, you actually sleep on Wendy's chili, some of the best chili in the game, but that's another topic for another day. But I think rice and chili sounds really good.
But you don't really, it's not normal.
No, it's not normal, but still though, like it sounds good and it kind of seems like a form of like a jambalaya in a sense, like kind of like an Americanized version of a jambalaya.
Yeah, especially if you've got a soupier chili on the spectrum of chilies. Like if you got the Texas, like the Terlingua Red, which really is just a bunch of beef with seasoning, and it's delightful. You're not getting me to say anything bad about the Texas chili.
Almost a sloppy Joe, in a sense.
Yeah, but and, I mean, it's got that like anger to it. It's got that hardiness.
Like.
You don't need the rice there.
No, always makes everything better. So if you're asking, should rice be with it? My answer would be yes. It's traditionally not with it. But rice with anything that is soup-like and or scooped out of anything, I think rice is perfect.
So send your pal a tweet. I'm at Funny Danny. Not that is this good, because I know it's good. I have no doubt there's no problem. That's not the question. Is this normal? Like, is this as mainstream as I think it is or thought it was before? I've now had a cross-sampling of about a dozen people that have been like, I've never heard of that. And that feels weird to me. That's where I'm at.
I finished the miniseries on Netflix, The Perfect Couple. I told you about this a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a little while to bang through it, what with football, Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night. It's just a lot of football. But I got through it. It's 6 episodes. It is your prototypical, it's like the length of one of the old HBO miniseries. Netflix calls it a miniseries. It came out on Netflix on September 5th. It's got an awesome cast. I think it's a Netflix OG. But they pay a lot of money for these because Nicole Kidman and Liev Schreiber and Eve Hewson and some other stars are in it. It was very, very good. Twists and turns like a roller coaster, which is what we all want. You're kind of always wondering what's happening. It is exactly what your boy's looking for.
It's a Paulson Wheelhouse show.
In a whodunit.
Yeah.
I'm going, well, could it be them? No way it's them. Could it be them? Wait, why did they just shoot that way? Let me rewind this. What did they just say? Why did the camera stay on her as she made that face for a second? The perfect whodunit. I'm going to give it 8 buffalo wings out of 10.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, dude.
A lot of surprising twists. I won't give anything away. A lot of intrigue. They leave open a lot of possibilities until the end. And a lot of attractive people. A lot of beautiful women,
okay.
Great actresses.
Great actresses.
A lot of good-looking dudes. It's a good-looking show. All the things we're looking for in the world. So The Perfect Couple on Netflix gets my highest regards. You can check it out. And the beauty of it, unlike all the shows that you're going to be told to watch by other people, where they have to take up like 8,000 hours of your time, this is 6 episodes that you can knock this thing out, 5-plus hours. You're home free with a conclusion. The way you drew it up. The way it's supposed to
be. It's the perfect storm for you. I'm telling you. If something is popular, even if it's just 8 episodes per season, If it's in the middle of season two, it's Grant's just like, ah, I can't. I just can't do it.
That's like, you remember Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah, of course.
Whodunit miniseries. Let's go.
That's your wheelhouse, man. You're never getting this group of characters again. You want them that one time,
exactly.
Single serving, take me on a story, and then never talk to me again.
That's, you've cracked the case.
I've experienced the number of incredible shows I've begged you, please watch this history, this amazing thing that they'll be talking about. They'll teach classes on this stuff.
You're like, seasons.
Too many episodes.
136 episodes. What are we doing here? The Beltway Blitz at the top of the hour, coming your way in just a handful of minutes. We're giving away those tickets to go see the HF Festival this weekend right here on Grant and Danny.